Excellence in Cybersecurity. That's Tuesday, November 12th. To register for the event, go to carthage.edu/AI.
This is WGTD-HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. You're listening to Community Matters, a program that focuses on the concerns in the Tri-County area. It's hosted by Jane Herring, Marcia Connett, Joan Rory, and Ron Purty. Community Matters also shares its time slot with the 32-time award-winning WGTD Radio Theater. And now, here's today's host.
Good morning and welcome to Community Matters. I'm Marcia Connett, your host today. And with me is Andre Bennett. Andre is with the Racine Unified School District, and we're going to talk about, I think, one of their best-kept secrets, a program that you may not be aware of. I certainly wasn't until he and I began to talk. So, Andre, do you want to introduce yourself, talk a little bit about, you know, who you are, how you got to where you are, and then we can talk about the program.
Sure. So, again, my name is Andre Bennett. I am the executive director of Racine Alternative Learning. This is my seventh year in this position. Prior to taking over here at Racine Alternative Learning, I was the directing principal at Starbucks for 3 years. Before then, I spent 6 years out in Janesville as an assistant principal there. And before that, I was a special education teacher here in Racine. So I taught at Case High School and over at Gilmore Middle School before it became fine arts.
Oh my gosh, that's phenomenal.
So I've done a little bit of everything. You know?
You have. And I think it sounds like the background that you have is the perfect mix for the kind of program that you're doing with Racine Unified. Mm-hmm. Now you said you've been here 7 years. Is that how long the program has been around?
No. Racine Alternative Learning as a collection. So there's about 11 programs in Racine Alternative that make up Racine Alternative Program, Alternative Learning. Mm-hmm. Most of those programs have been around well before I came to Racine. Most people kind of remember or know Racine Alternative Learning from what it was in its infancy stages when it first started. They kind of have that nasty taste in their mouth when you say the MAC Center.
Everybody
knows the MAC Center, and so I think that that's a component of us and who we were back then. Fresh Start was a program that was a part of us at one point in time.
Okay.
So those programs have existed for a long time. When we kind of came together as under one umbrella, which is Racine Alternative Learning, we've worked in kind of changing what those systems and programming look like. Some of the names have changed. And obviously, again, how we engage children in our programming has changed. But most folks know us will remember the MAC Center or Fresh Start.
Well, and, you know, I have to laugh. I remember the MAC Center because I had a stepson who was a very bright kid, but mm-hmm. who just didn't, you know, just didn't go with the flow, didn't apply himself, and ended up at the MAC Center because he was not passing a social studies class.
Yeah.
And, you know, we had a really good experience mm-hmm. there. I think part of it was Tim was like the smartest one. And so, you know, was sort of the star of that class that he was in. But I frankly walked away with a really pretty good feeling about it. So, and I think the MAC Center certainly had its place in those days. It was so
Sure. 100%. I think when districts create alternative programming, it's usually out of a need. And you're usually building that programming from, you know, in the sky, right? You know, it's kind of like when you're building a plane in the air, you're building this programming in the sky. It's not always perfect in the way in which you were hoping it would be, but it in that moment, it serves the purpose and it's supporting the needs of the population of student that are in need of those services.
Right.
But I think like anything else, it, you know, things need things have to change, things have to improve, things have to continue to get better, and the vision of those programs have to continue to get better. And I think that that's kind of what happened. We're seeing alternative learning, really what happened to Mac Center when Dr. Gallion was the assistant superintendent at the time, or the deputy superintendent at the time. It was his decision to kind of close down the Mac Center as we know it, and to kind of re-envision what that could look like.
Most definitely, most definitely. You mentioned Fresh Start. Do you want to talk a little bit about what that program was like and how it worked?
Yeah. So Fresh Start was a program that serviced students. I think when it first began, over close to 30 years ago, it serviced first graders or kindergartners through fifth grade. All elementary age children at that point in time. It was typically for students who were struggling. At that point in time, I think the program started, it was early 90s. Mm-hmm. You're talking about what I call the ADHD or ADD epidemic of young boys. And, you know, people were trying to figure out, okay, we got all these things. We got students who won't stay in their seats, who are exhibiting some real negative behaviors. And we needed support and help. And so from that standpoint, I think St. Luke's at the time created or were able to develop a program they called Fresh Start, which was really kind of a program that was based out of St. Luke's at the hospital.
Right, those students, the mental health unit.
Yeah, in the mental health unit. And they would work with those young children and getting them regulated in a sense. It was a med-based program for the most part. And so those students would remain there really until they were ready to rock and roll, hopefully to go back to their schools. I think there were some other components to how a kid could get there and how a kid would get dismissed from that program. Mm-hmm. But that's really what it serviced. It was young students who were struggling with ADHD. I think that as the years went by, the acuity of the students changed, the need of the program changed. And so you went from just really looking at young boys and young girls with who had been identified maybe of having ADHD to more severe mental health and more trauma-based behaviors than what initially was that was thought of, right? And so that program, I think, that partnership with the Unified and St. Luke's, which turned into Ascension, existed for close to 30 years.
I remember that program, and I remember thinking at that time it was such a needed program, because the kids could come for their school day in mm-hmm. that setting. And so, you know, they were getting some, and there was still so much that wasn't understood about
Correct.
Those behaviors at the time.
Correct.
And like you say, now, you know, we understand so much more. But the thing I liked about it was not just that it was a fresh start, but it caught those kids really early before mm-hmm. they could be, you know, labeled, you know, just unteachable. And, you know, and then they could go on and hopefully have a near normal experience for the rest of their school lives. And has something taken the place of that?
So, you know, we kind of amicably dissolved that partnership or that program, not necessarily the partnership with us in Ascension, mm-hmm. 3 years ago. We work with our elementary-based program here at RAL, which at one point was called INC, Intensive Needs Classroom, to what we call is SPURS today. So it's a specially designed program that really works with students who are exhibiting some of those same needs. And the majority of that work obviously is happening directly out of the district. What we're tending to see is that there's a lot less need for that type of programming with the advent of the partnerships that the district has developed with Children's, and having our school-based mental health clinics in our elementaries and middle schools. I think, you know, a high schooler too has one as well. So because we were starting to, like you said, we were learning more as educators, we were learning more about mental health, we were learning more and are learning more about trauma, the need has changed, and understanding what the need is and understanding our role as a district and as an education provider, and realizing that I think we have more to do than just teach, you know, kind of ABCs and 1, 2, 3. So adding those components to our elementary schools has been very significant in reducing the number of students that needed to be kind of, you know, sent to those types of programs.
Yeah.
And so at this point, we're able to service those students better in-house.
Okay.
Than we would have, you know, 30 years ago. So we do have a version of that program here. We're seeing alternative learning. We call it SPURS. Okay. But it's still very different than what Fresh Start was.
Okay. You said something that I was not aware of. And if I'm not, maybe our listeners are not. There are in-school mental health support programs.
Yeah. So I can't remember where the first one was. I think JT and maybe Knapp Elementary had community-based mental health programs built into their kind of partnered with the district, and they have a space within the school where that therapist resides, and families can receive access to mental health and therapeutic services through that space.
So whole families.
Whole families, yeah. So it's a wow. community-based situation. So if people are going into that space and being supported in that way. And because I think of the success of that, the district continues to work with adding additional programs into other buildings. So there's very few elementaries, I think, at this point who don't have them. And obviously we're moving to the K-8 system. So those programs will be joining the new buildings as well. So,
right.
Yes. So that's been going on, I would say, Marsha, since, I mean, I got back in Racine 10 years ago, maybe 10 years mm-hmm. this year. And that work was already being done when I returned here to Unified. So
boy,
it's been going on for almost 10 years now.
A well-kept secret, because that is something I hadn't heard of before. And to know that it is, you know, widely offered is really encouraging.
Yeah.
And do you think we've seen improvements in classroom atmospheres because of this sort of thing?
100% I do. I think that anytime you can get ahead of things, the more impactful it's going to have within the classroom setting in the long run, right? Are we perfect? No. Are we, you know, COVID set us all back, right? So I will say that, you know, we're trying to dig ourselves out of that COVID hole. However, we are seeing, and I would think that a lot of schools, and again, I could tell you just by what the number of students we were sending to Fresh Starts prior to our school-based mental health programs to what we were sending to Fresh Start after the school-based mental health programs reduced significantly. And to me, that could only be looked at as, obviously there's been some improvement, some significant improvement, right, on really the impact of negative behaviors within a classroom. Are we perfect? Not at all. Are we growing and getting to a space where we can see the impact of implementing these type of programs? Absolutely.
Good. Oh, that's so good to hear. That's so good. Well, and we've certainly stepped a little away from where we were headed, but I think this is really good. This really gives us a good base to start with, to talk about the alternative program that's being offered, the one that you and I first connected about.
Right, right. So what, I mean, the alternative program has been a mashup of programs that existed in Unified, again, for years. Some of these programs existed for 20, 30, 40 years. Some of them are newer in a sense, and they've been around maybe for the last decade or so. And some of them we've created in the last few years that I've been here. They service students anywhere from first grade to 21 years of age.
Wow.
We are servicing kids inside the school, inside the building here. We service kids. We have our alternative programming now housed at our three traditional high schools, our academy school high schools, as well as obviously we are the educational provider of instruction to young men and women who have found themselves unfortunately incarcerated in a county jail and a Racine County Juvenile Detention Center.
Oh, really?
Yes. So our biggest program, however, continues to be our credit recovery program, which is what a lot of people don't know, is that when our juniors and seniors are in a place where they're at risk not to graduate, the opportunity to go somewhere where they can do really full-blown credit recovery every period of the day to regain those credits lost in the previous years and still be on track to graduate is our biggest program. And I think it's one of the successes of the work that has been done, but it's one of the biggest programs that we have. In a year, at any given time, we can have anywhere from 50 to 100 plus students come through that program in a year's time.
Oh my gosh.
With the majority of them being juniors, but the seniors that are with us or come with us, we're graduating that group of kids somewhere in that, which we would call four-year seniors, in the high 80s to the high, high 90s in between the two.
That is really impressive.
When they come, what the potential that these kids are going to graduate. Mm-hmm. Now we've made a lot of changes to the way in which our program works. That's through a referral-based program. So those kids are typically at one of our high schools. It could be Real Walden. Over the years, we've started taking kids in from St. Cat's and Lutheran and other schools in the area as well.
Oh, wonderful.
Just for kids who, for whatever reason, are struggling or not being able to maintain. One of the things that we say, Marsha, is that life happens to all of us. And then life doesn't change because you're a teenager. It doesn't change because you're in elementary school. Life happens to all of us. Things happen. Has happened that has got our kids off track, we are a space where hopefully those kids can come and get back on track. So that's our ultimate goal. I think that's what we've been successful at the most. So our credit recovery program, which people know as RAE, R-A-E, is the biggest program here. Again, I said we service elementary students too. So we do have a handful of students who have some high either behavioral or mental health needs who may be very young. Some of them are or aren't diagnosed. It's hard, obviously, to diagnose a very young child. But obviously the behaviors and the needs may go beyond what it can be serviced in the traditional school setting. And so we take on that work, and we're supporting the needs of those little ones. Turning Point Academy, or what we call TPA, is the revised version of what most people knew as the MAC Center. That program still provides servicing to students who have been sent to us via their IEP, students who have been sent to us via a potential expulsion. There's a number of reasons how kids can get to Turning Point Academy, but usually the ultimate goal is to get them back on track instructionally, and behaviorally, and get them back to their traditional schools instead of being with us. So that program at any given time could support 50 to 70 kids. Typically, we try to stay at around 60, but we're usually closer to the higher end of that number. By the end of a school year, we do have our Inspire program here, which services teen moms, so pregnant or after they've given birth. And we work with a lot of parenting courses with those young ladies at the beginning of the day. They have the instructional component of their day in the afternoon. But those young ladies, the young mothers or mothers-to-be, have the ability to be around one another and talk about the challenges of pregnancy, the challenges of obviously being a teen mom, some privacy that they may want, right? It's not every kid wants to be in their high school of 1,700 kids or 1,500 kids and pregnant at the same time. Sure. So it you know, we minimized that program to only 15 young women at the young ladies at the time. So we're working through that and trying to ensure that we're supporting them in any way we know we can, as they, you know, are now taking on that challenge of being obviously young moms. The program Save Power is not something that's just new to Inspire, although we have a program called Inspire. Our Safe Heart nurses or our nurses, these things still are running in our high schools as well. Obviously, we have more kids that unfortunately who are pregnant or fortunate, depends on how you look at it, to be honest, who are pregnant than maybe at our high schools. But, you know, very few are looking to come to us now versus maybe 5 years ago, 6 years ago.
Really?
I think the dynamic has changed a little bit. But we still, every year, we still are going to have probably four or five young ladies in that program every semester. We also have a program here called TEP, and TEP is a transitional education program. Oh, I'm sorry.
Nope, that's fine. You know what? We are going to take a quick break right now because we're at a good point. When we come back, I want to unpack a lot of information that you've given us about each of those programs. But I just want to remind everyone that we are listening to Community Matters here on WGTD 91.1, your gateway to public radio. My guest today is Andre Bennett, and Andre is with the Racine Unified School System, but we are talking about many, many programs that fall under his sort of jurisdiction. And I want to go back to what you were talking about just a moment before the break, the Inspire program, and how fewer girls are really feeling a need for that, maybe because they're getting the support they need from others in their day-to-day during school. But how do you, are you seeing a way that this may be evolving into something different?
I don't know if that's the case. I think that what you're seeing is, you know, if you go back 30, 40 years, teen pregnancy was this faux pas. It was something that was frowned upon significantly. And I think with the advent of the Safe Heart program, which is, again, I think it's a couple decades old and was a statewide or maybe even federally funded program. I really don't know. I know it was at one point funded by the state to some degree. The purpose of the program was to reduce teen pregnancy in general, right? And it's done its job. You know, there were a point in time where Racine was home to 200 to 300 potential teen moms a year. And I think that is decreased significantly. So the program in itself has done its job. I think that, and we as a society in the sense have grown, in a way that being a teen mom doesn't mean you have to be a recluse and go hide out until you have this baby and things like that. I don't think it's that. We're not in that world anymore, hopefully. And so I think a lot of our girls aren't as ashamed to just be out there and to continue their education in their traditional schools. They're not really being ridiculed the way they would have been 30 years ago.
Sure, sure. Well, I can remember, and of course this was ancient history, you couldn't stay in school.
Correct.
Once you were pregnant and or showing. And that was horrendous because many of those young women never did finish high school. And that's really what, you know, what you're in the business of, making sure that everyone can. Can you talk a little bit more about the Turning Point program?
Yeah, so Turning Point Academy, again, is really just a renewed version of, but an improved version of what the Mac Center set out to be. It's a place where we focus on what got our kids to us, you know, regardless of what that situation was, regardless of what mistakes those children made, they still are entitled to a free and appropriate public education. And so ultimately our goal is to work with them on figuring that out. Like, what is it that I did? what is my role in ensuring that this does not happen again in a school-based setting? And then the ability to continue to move on. And so going through that, partnering with programs like Professional Services Group that allow, that give us opportunity to not only be engaged with students during the school day, but PSG supports us in getting our kids to and from school over at TPA. They work at, communicating with the families when there are things going on. There's so much involved in that component that I'm going to miss out on a lot of, how that program has changed over the years. But it's a program that right now I think we have about 60 kids in starting this year. The ultimate goal, again, is to get those kids back into their traditional schools. So what did they do to get us here? They're working off a portfolio of, to show examples of the things they've done over the course of the time that they've been in the program, specifically looking at what got them there, how they've improved in that area, what has helped them, what coping mechanisms they've gained, what tools they've put in their toolkit, toolbox to be able to utilize instead of, maybe losing their temper or whatever the case may be. This that continued growth. And I'll be honest, Marsha, sometimes kids come to us and they come to that program and they never leave because unfortunately not everybody is in the space to be able to see the need for growth at that age. Mm-hmm. And we understand that it'd be better off if that kid remains with us versus putting that kid back in a situation where they would create more issue for themselves, to be honest. And so we never want this to be a negative thing on either end. We're trying to ensure that kids understand that their expectations and that the more they understand that, the more they're willing to, really meet us halfway, the more that we're able to build capacity in them as individuals to be able to go back and engage in a more traditional space than they are when they're at TPA.
No kidding. One of the things that we haven't mentioned is that by having all of these wonderful programs, it allows the teachers in those traditional classrooms that are trying to operate with a classroom full of kids to be able to do that without having to try to serve the needs of kids who need so much more. And so those kids who used to get cheated out of a classroom experience because there were those students who just couldn't function are now getting the education they need, and the kids with these special needs are getting the services that they need as well. I think that is just such a win-win.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I think that you have to regulate the learning environment in order for teachers to be able to do their job. I'm married to a former educator who spent most of her career in the classroom and ended as an administrator before she stepped away from education. But being able to maintain, when we started, classroom sizes were in the high teens, mid-20s, right? Yeah. And with all the federal regulation and changes in budgeting across the country, classroom sizes have ballooned. And it's a lot to be said. There's a lot to be said on how you're able to manage a classroom, whether you're in a public school or a private school, that is 15 to 20 kids versus a class that may be 30 to 35 kids. And so if you are dealing with students who, for whatever reason, are creating some level of disruption, again, whether it's because of the trauma that they've been through, just the inability to really focus in a space with so many classmates, the advent of social media and technology. There are so many things that have changed the way teachers have to teach. I couldn't imagine personally have to teach when every kid in my classroom is on their cell phone all day, right?
I can't.
And, that is an issue that is across the country. I don't care what school you're in, folks are dealing with it to some capacity, you know, and some districts are able to manage it a lot better than others just based on district policy or state policy. But there are so many components to this that are very different than, you know, when you and I were in school.
Exactly. Exactly. So, does Racine Unified have a district policy about cell phones in the classroom?
They are working on one right now. Okay. And so it's not, there's no finality to it at this point, but they are actively working on a policy right now as it relates to cell phones and other technology in the classroom.
Okay, so now it's kind of up to each teacher, right, to lay down whatever ground rules they have. So it could, you know, if I were in middle school, so it would vary from my math class to my social studies class to my science class.
Yeah, you know, when I was at Starbucks and I was a principal there, it was always, you know, we had an expectation, we had a policy that we put together as a building. But a policy is only as good as those who are implementing the policy, right? And so there are going to be times where you may have a math teacher who's like, you know what, we can use the calculator on this phone
exactly.
in my class. And the music teacher is saying, no, I don't need you to, I need your voice and your attention. And your phone is just a distraction, and we don't need that in my class. And, you know, when you're dealing with young children, you're going to hear things like, well, Miss So-and-so said I can use it. She lets me use it. You're the only teacher who says I can. And that creates an issue for those teachers, right? Those teachers become the ones known for not being cool because they won't let kids use their cell phones and stuff like that. But, it so many things have changed, you know. I just know that I'll have kids in class right now who get a call from a parent in the middle of class, you know, and they have to step out to take a phone call. You know, just there's so many things have changed that we have to deal with as it relates to technology. I mean, if my mom needed to get in touch with me, she called the main office.
Exactly. You
know?
Yep.
Now I just call my child right in the middle of class because I got to ask them a question.
Wow.
And you know, that's, you know, what do you say to a kid whose mom is on the phone, you know? And I've had to deal with those situations as an administrator where I've, you know, been trying to deal with a student. He's like, it's my mom. And I've gotten on the phone and been, hey, mom, here's the situation. But there are difficulties that come with technology. And so when you're dealing with all of the other things that go on, from a day-to-day basis, not to mention, again, a lot of these things the teachers deal with that are happening on social media that are being brought into our schools. There are going to be incidences. There are going to be the more kids you put in the classroom, the more access you get to social media and technology, the more chances you have of situations occurring, not only in the classroom, but just in the school building in general. And the leaders that we have in our buildings, our administrators, our principals, those folks, our support staff, our educators, our educational assistants, everybody is dealing with things today that 20 years ago or 10 years ago with technology, sometimes 2-3 years ago, we didn't have to deal with.
Exactly. You know, I was just, as you were saying that, I was just thinking about the level of bullying. You know, mm-hmm. back when you and I first started in this world of education, you know, bullying happened on the playground and it was face to face and, you know, and kids chose up sides and it was nasty, but it was manageable because you could see it. But
correct.
Now bullying is on a whole different level, especially with social media.
Well, I can bully you. I mean, the saddest part about it is bullying or harassment, whatever you want to call it, based on what the incident is. I used to be able to, you know, if there was a bullying situation, it was more individualized. And it was me and Marcia had an issue and she would say things to me, to her friends or whatever.
Yep.
And it was just so, it was just in our small group. Now I can say something or post something about you on social media that the entire city sees. And now you have to deal with the fact that everybody sees that or is being, you know, so it's you're right. I mean, there are so many things that are so different that are so impactful in the way in which schools are able to operate today that it takes a special type of educator It takes a special type of leader to continue in this field and continue pushing forward for the greater good and understanding the impact of education on our children in this community specifically, but across the country. Everybody is dealing with it in some degree. I think sometimes we want to localize these problems as if it's a Racine Unified issue, but it's not. I think it's a nationwide issue that we're dealing with. And maybe they're dealing with it differently on smaller levels when you go to more private schools or parochial schools, but it's still happening. And we know it's still happening because I see children from all of those spaces here at Racine Alternative Learning at some point throughout the course of a school year, whether it's one call or two calls, we're still getting those calls from kids who are struggling in those other areas as well for a number of reasons. So, I mean, we're here to provide servicing for children in the city of Racine, as well as, you know, if you're in our unified area, Racine Alternative Learning is here to service those needs to some capacity. Now, most of our programs, there's some type of referral process to get in, but we're here to service everybody.
Okay, that is absolutely amazing. I wonder if you could talk in more detail about the credit recovery program. Was it Ray? Is that what it was?
Yeah.
In part because I'm really curious, what's the oldest student that you can work with? Are you limited by a student's age? And then what does that look like?
Yeah. So I think the oldest student we can work with, it changes depending on identification. So what I mean by that is that a general education student, I think the state of Wisconsin says that you could still work with them up until the age of 20. And then kids with educational, individual education plans or IEPs is up to the age of 21. So we can technically, if my birthday, say, was in October, I turned 21 in October, we don't kick them out when they turn 21.
Okay.
After that year, they wouldn't be able to come back. So it looks very different. So we have a number of programs now, Marsh, that we didn't have, say, 5 years ago when we were seeing Unified. Our traditional credit recovery has been around quite some time. Here at RAL, we're seeing alternative learning looks very different than it looks in our high schools. We have full-time enrolled teachers who are teaching math, science, social studies, English to students who need those credits, who are behind in those credits. And we also have access to online programming that also would allow us to, for kids to recover credits. What they're doing, however, is a variation of the work that they would have been doing at their traditional high schools. So it's the same work, the same curriculum, but obviously modified for credit recovery purposes. So what does that mean? That means if I took Algebra 1 as a freshman and I failed it semester 1, we're not going to make you go through the entire book per se, but you're going to have to do a nice chunk of this work to show us that you're competent in Algebra 1 in order to get that credit.
So you've learned the concepts however long it takes. Okay.
Correct. However it takes you as a kid. Every kid is on an individualized basis, so when kids come here, they're not having to worry about what their classmates are doing. As I tell kids during our orientation, you came here on your own unless there's a twin with you. So I need you to focus on you. This is all about you, and because you were referred here to me and that we accepted you, that meant you wanted to be here. So those things that may have gotten in the way at home, we ask that we leave them outside and that we try to focus as much as we can, because there is a number of reasons why kids come to us, right? Like I said, life experience happens, but we try to push that we need kids to be self-advocates for themselves. So if something is still going on, there's so many of our kids in credit recovery who now have full-time jobs, because the work world has changed. You know, they're hiring 16-year-olds full-time now. So some of these kids have full-time jobs. Some of these kids have children at home and they don't have child care. Some of these kids are, you know, having to raise their siblings when their mom or dad or parents are at work. Some of our kids have been through traumatic situations that have not allow them to attend school regularly. There's a myriad of reasons. We have seen an increase in students who are on the autism spectrum as well.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of support do they get? Do they get something in addition to come to the credit recovery program?
I'm going to say, other than the love of the staff that's here, no. We don't have any additional services. I mean, we have your typical school counselors, school psychs, speech paths. We have all of those things that you're going to see in your traditional school. We do have a behavioral interventionist here who is just a savior and a great human being that kids can access when they're falling off track or when they're getting upset or whatever. They can always go to her.
There really are some supports.
I would say the supports come from everybody here, though. I mean, our kids know that they're going to build relationships. Our ultimate goal here is for every kid who's here to have a relationship with an adult. It's a lot easier for us to do than it would be in a school of 1,700.
Oh, my gosh. Well, you know, we've only got a couple of minutes. I can't believe how quickly the time has gone this morning. You've referred several times to here. Where is here? Where is this wonderful stuff located?
We're in the Old Kirkton Medical Clinic on 2333 Northwestern Avenue. Mm-hmm. So everybody knows the building. It's no longer a medical space, but it's an educational space. And
you are all that's in that building, right? No.
There's a lot. There's a bunch of district offices here now. A lot of district departments that are here. So we have, the campus is called CPC Campus, which is a community, I can't remember what CPC stands for, I'm sorry.
That's all right. That's okay. Oh my goodness. Well, there you are, right in the heart of Racine. This has been absolutely fascinating, and I have a feeling you and I could talk for another hour about all the programs, and I hope you will come back, because I think we've just scratched the surface of the wonderful opportunities that there are for students in the Racine Unified School System. So, Andre, thank you.
Thank you for having me, Marsha. I appreciate it. And definitely at any point in time that you would have me back, I'd love to be here. You know, can get enough of bragging about the work that we do at Racine Alternative Learning. So.
Good for you. And you certainly deserve it. And thanks to all of you who joined us today on Community Matters. We'll talk to you again soon.
You've been listening to Community Matters. All programs are archived at WGTD.org. Click Shows. This is WGTD-HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva.
Support for WGTD's local news and public affairs commitment comes from Casey Family Options, a tradition of trust. For more information, including how to get started in pre-planning, visit CaseyFamilyOptions.com or call 262-653-0667.
I'm Gregory Berg, and on Monday's morning show here on WGTD, part two of my conversation with renowned composer Ricky Ian Gordon, talking about his extraordinarily candid and illuminating memoir called Seeing Through, a chronicle of sex, drugs, and opera. In this portion of the conversation, we focus on some of his most noteworthy works for the stage and his creative process. Join me for Monday's morning show beginning just after 8.
WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine.